A couple of months ago, a student, not a Talmud of mine, approached me in the Beis Medrash with a shaila. He does computer work on the side, and he had done some work for somebody, and he explained to them they needed something fixed, and he told them he could try a couple of things, they might or might not work, but if they didn't work, he'd have to do something else, but he charges by the time. And so he tried it, and the repair didn't work, and he told them this might happen, and they didn't want to pay him. And at some point they offered to pay him half, and he was very upset. It was before Rosh Hashanah, and he wanted to know whether he could take them to Din Torah, what should he do? So the truth is the sum of money was not very large, and I suggested to him that the expense and tircha of going to a Din Torah would really be not worth it. There was another possibility, of course, which was, and I know if he may have raised this, is that they came back to him to do further work. So if he wanted, you know, there were a couple of options. One of them is that once they gave him the computer to work on, he could have withheld the computer until full payment was made. Alternatively, he could have also simply, he had to give him a bill for the amount of time that he worked on the computer, so he could have overbilled them in effect and billed the extra half hour, which they hadn't paid him for on the second thing, and they probably wouldn't have known the difference. And the question was, is this permissible? This is what we would call, potentially what we would call, avid inish dina l'nafshei. A person can execute justice for themselves. When I spoke to my students about this, and I suspect in this audience, I think most of the people, you know, my age or older, probably most of the audience will remember the name Bernie Goetz. My students don't know who that is, but it's a totally unfamiliar name. But this was my first introduction to the notion of what vigilante justice is. For those who don't remember who he was the subway shooter who had been mugged many times and was approached by four not-so-friendly looking youths who asked for his wallet. He pulled out a gun and he shot them. He may have overdone it a little bit as well. But nonetheless, that was my first introduction to this. And the question is, under what circumstances do we say Avid Inish Dina L'Nafshei? Now, before turning to Chazal's treatment of the topic, I wanted to just, if you start to think about some biblical passages, there is such a notion that exists. And starting with perhaps a very famous passage in Parshas Mishpatim, which is the din of Bava Machteres. And source number one, the Torah in Parshas Mishpatim reads, speaking about a ganav, im ba machteres yimatzeh haganav u'kava meisein lo damim. If the ganav is caught tunneling into the house and he is killed at that point, so he has no blood. It was essentially permissible to kill him. In Zarcha Hashem Shalav Damim Lo Shalem Yishalem Menelvim Kabri Devaso. But if in fact he doesn't represent a danger to life, so then one is not allowed to kill him. Now, one might of course look at this, and it's related din, and I'm not going to explain the difference, but they're not exactly the same as the din of Rodef, the law of the pursuer. They're similar, but there are certain differences. One might look at this and say, well, this is not vigilante justice, this is simply self-defense. This is not a form of din, it's simply a form of preserving life. However, if you analyze the sugyos in Sanhedrin that deal with Rodef and Bava Machteres, you start to see that in fact it is a form of din. The Gemara in Sanhedrin, and there are any number of examples, but the Gemara in Sanhedrin states, still source one, but letter days, Tanu Rabbanan Damim Lo, Bein B'chol Bein B'Shabbos. When we say that damim lo, that you're not allowed to kill him, that applies both during the week and on Shabbos. Ein lo damim, when we say that he has no blood and you're allowed to kill him, bein b'chol bein b'Shabbos. So we have Xeris HaKasuv, according to Chazal, that tells us that the din of Bava Machteres, both in terms of not being allowed to kill the person and being allowed to kill the person, applies on Shabbos. So the Gemara says, b'shlama ein lo damim, bein b'chol bein b'Shabbos, that you're allowed to kill him. It's true. I needed a pasuk to tell you that. Why? You would have thought that this would have the same din as haruge beisdin. The b'shabbos lo katlina. You're not allowed. Beisdin cannot execute a person on Shabbos. Okay? It's not just a question of malacha. The Rav had a whole Torah about this, that beisdin cannot administer onesh on Shabbos, even if it doesn't involve a malacha. So you would have thought that you're not allowed to kill Habava Machteras on Shabbos. Kamash Malan de Katlima. So certainly the Havamina of the Gemara here, the Havamina of the Gemara here is that Baba Machteras is a din of Mishpat. You are the judge, you are the jury, we don't have a jury, you're the executioner. And therefore, there was a Havamina that on Shabbos you're not allowed to kill a Baba Machteras. So that's what the Pasuk comes and teaches you, that in fact you are allowed to do so. Now, what exactly the Torah is teaching you? Is it teaching you that this is not a din of Mishpat, it's just a din of self-defense? That's a separate issue. But certainly the Havamina of the Gemara is clear. If you look at another source, which I think makes the point more clear in terms of the maskana, source Gimel under number one, Tanya Idach Machteres, Ainli Ela Machteres. How do you know that this din does not only apply in your someone who's tunneling in? Gago Chatzero VeKarpifo Minayin. How do you know if someone comes in via the roof, via the chatzer? Situations again similar to Bab Machteres, but not exactly the same. Tamad Lomar Yimatse Haganav Mikol Makom. So the Gemara says it doesn't matter the specific circumstances; the din applies in the same way. Im Kain Ma Tamad Lomar Machteres. Why then does the Torah single out? Why does it choose Machteres as the example? The answer is Machtarto Zohi Hasra Asa. It's not clear exactly what this drasha is, but it seems. whatever the drasha is exactly based upon is that the Torah is telling you that a Baba Machteres has Hasra. He's been warned already. That somehow, if we were lacking the element of Hasra, then one would not be allowed to kill a Baba Machteres. Now, Hasra, generally speaking, is a function of Beis Din. It's one of the technical requirements. It's one of the technical requirements of capital punishment. So the fact that we speak of the case of Baba Machteres as being the Machteres is the Hasra, but again, whatever that means, suggests that in fact, when you kill him, you are executing justice. You are not simply acting in self-defense. When it comes to a Rodef, you know, you have to know that the Rodef is trying to kill you, but you don't have to, you know, when the Rodef is chasing you and is trying to stab you, you don't have to turn around and say, you know, it's possible to do so, and if you kill me, they're going to bring you to Beis Din, and he has to stay off al-Pikain, and if the Rodef doesn't stay off al-Pikain, you know, you're not allowed to kill him. So apparently, the mere fact that he's chasing you, that constitutes the Hasra. But the idea that you need, at least in a technical sense, the Hasra suggests that you're dealing with mishpat, you're not dealing with simply an individual acting in self-defense. Now, there's maybe one other clear-cut case of Aved Nishdina Lenafshei, or similar to Aved Nishdina Lenafshei, which would perhaps deliver the opposite message. Baba Machteres suggests that we do respect the person's right to act on his own behalf and exact justice. There is a story, or a case, that's described at the end of Parshas Ki Tzetzeh, source number two, Ki inatzu anashim yachdav ish v'yachiv v'karva ish es hachav latzil es isha miyad makehu. So a woman's husband is fighting with another man and she wants to intervene to save her husband. V'shalcha yadav v'chazika b'mfushav. And she goes and she engages an act that is humiliating to the other person, forgetting about how physically painful it might be. The Torah says, v'katzo so'as kaka, you should cut off her hands. Chazal understand this is not literally meant, but rather this teaches us the din of mamon and boshes. Lo sachos einecha, you shouldn't have compassion. So here, I presume the woman is acting in effective self-defense of her husband, and nonetheless, the Torah says she is to be punished, which would suggest that you don't say aved nishdina lenafshe. Now, one might suggest, of course, that the difference between these two cases is a person acting on one's own behalf versus acting on somebody else's behalf, but certainly that's not a position that's generally accepted, because when it comes to the law of rodef, the pursuer, you're not only obligated to act in your own self-defense, but you're also obligated when there's no more danger to yourself to act as a good Samaritan to try to intervene on someone else's behalf. So here there seems to be something of the opposite message. Two other cases that deserve brief mention, which do seem to be a form of Aved Nishdina Lenafshei, but actually, in fact, are not. One is the din of Goel Hadam, the redeemer of blood, that if a person is Rotzeach B'Shogeg and has left the cities of refuge, the Arei Miklat, so the Goel Hadam is allowed to kill him. Now, this does appear to be some form of vigilante justice, but it's actually not din, because at least according to some, certainly, there's no obligation to kill him. There's no desire that this person be put to death. It seems to, Goel Hadam seems to be a concession to the overheated feelings of the relatives whose relative has been killed. But we wouldn't say that this, in fact, is din, as opposed to the situation of Rodev, the Baba Machteris, where there's a mitzvah to kill the person because he's endangering somebody else, or potentially endangering somebody else. Or there might even be a mitzvah to save a person who's being beaten up by somebody else. But there is one shita that says it's a mitzvah, but certainly, according to the other shita, certainly it's not a mitzvah. And even here, the mitzvah, it's not clear what it is, because there's no death penalty for Rotzeach Shogeg in principle. So it's possible, according to one shita, that's Aved Nishdin Lanafshei. And I would add one other detail. Even if it's din, it's not Lanafshei. In the case of a Rodev, you're acting on your own behalf. And even if someone is intervening to save you, someone's acting on your behalf. In fact, you're a bal davar. You're entitled to something. You're entitled to your life, and someone is restoring that to you. When it comes to a woman intervening to save her husband, it's the same thing. He's entitled not to be beaten up. When you're dealing with killing your Rotzeach Shogeg, it's not clear. It's certainly not Lanafshei. The Goel Adam is not acting. The Goel Adam is not entitled to anything. Al pi din. So that's one example, which maybe doesn't really fall in this category. The second, which I'm pretty certain doesn't, but it's a very interesting category, and certainly the classic example of what we would call a vigilante, or maybe better a zealot, is the din of Kanaim Poginbo. So Chazal, the Mishnah, and Sanhedrin tell us that there are three people for whom Kanaim are Poginbo, that zealots are allowed to kill on the spot, the famous one being Abal Aramis Beshuk, based upon the story of Pinchas, when he kills Zimri. That, I think, also does not qualify as what we would call Avedish Din Lanafshei. Aside from that being Lanafshei, if you were to walk into Beis Din and ask Kishayla, they would tell you not to do it. So it's difficult to say, and it's not something that normally carries capital punishment. So if it's not the normal punishment, and Beis Din, if you ask, would tell you not to do it, so then it certainly doesn't seem to be Avedish Din Lanafshei. It's sort of a category in its own right. Okay, so anyway, so we have perhaps an institution of Avad Nishdi Lanafshei in some situations in the Torah, and maybe a couple of examples that look like it but might not exactly qualify. So how did Chazal deal with this? And note, up until now, we haven't dealt with any cases of mamon. These have all been cases of either nefashos or personal injury, not classic financial issues. So the Gemara Baba Kama, source number 3, at the beginning of the third parak, states as follows. Shalach le Rav Chisda le Rav Nachman. Rav Chisda sent a shayla. Hare amru le rechuva shalosh u le ve'ita chamesh. If you hit someone with, I'm not sure exactly what rechuva is. Ve'ita is you kick him, you have to pay 5 zuz or 5 slaim as the punishment for boshes. Lisno keres, you pay shloshes rei. Different ways of hitting somebody that you embarrass him. And for between the haka and the boshes, you have to pay certain kedusas. Lipanoto demora ulkufina demora mai. What if you hit him with a shovel? And one is the handle, one is the head of the one is the top of the shovel. What kedus? What's the appropriate amount? So Rav Nachman sends back. Shalach le chista chista. Kedusa kam babis bavavel. You're fining people in Bavel. You're not allowed to do that. Dayanim in Bavel don't have the power to judge. We're not today. All rabbis are not real rabbis. We don't have real smicha. We don't have real powers of dayanos. So, and we do some dinei Torah only because of a principle of shlichu sayu kavdina, and we're empowered by the original last dayanim who had real smicha. But the Gemara in the number of sugyos says that that power is very limited. And one of the things that we do not have the power to do this man hazeh is to assess kenasos. So he says, what are you doing? So then he says, "Emalei gufa du'ubda hechaved." Tell me, by the way, what exactly happened anyway? Let me hear the details of the case. So shalach lei, he sends back to him. De'ahu gargusa de'beitrei. There was a water well that two people had rights to. The chol yoma havadale chad minayim. The deal was that each one got to draw water on one day, and the well presumably replenished itself each day from underground water sources. But once you drew water from the well on one day, that was it for the day. There was no more water. So what happens? Asachad, one of them came, and Kadali Biyoma de Lalilei, he was trying to draw water on a day that wasn't his. Amar Lei, the other guy said to him, Yoma Didihu, it's my day to draw the water. Lo Ashkape, the guy went listen to him. Shakal Panada de Maramache, he took the shovel, took the handle, and he whacked him with it. So Amar Leh, Rav Nachman responds to Rav Chisda and says, you got it all wrong. Forget what the appropriate knas would be if a knas were due and we were able to assess a knas. He should have hit him 100 times if necessary. Meaning, the guy was within his rights to beat the other guy up. Why? Even the sheet in the Gemara that says that you're not allowed to act on your own behalf and exact justice. B'makom pseida, if in fact you stand to lose, and in this case, once the water was gone for the day, there's no more water. That's not coming back today. So b'makom pseida avedinishdin l'navshe. Ironically, Rav Nachman didn't say in the statement that he's the one who holds that even b'makom, there's no pseida avedinishdin l'navshe, but we'll see that in a moment. So Rav Nachman said to Rav Chisda, the guy who whacked his friend with the shovel was acting properly. He had every right to do so. If he needed to hit him more times to make him stop, then he could have done so. The Itmar, we have taught, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Amar lo aved inishdin l'nafshe. Rabbi Yehuda says that you're not allowed to act on your own behalf. Rav Nachman Amar, aved inishdin l'nafshe, a person is. So now the Gemara explains. Hecha the ikah pseida, when you stand to lose something, you may not be able to recover. Kulei amar lo pligi da aved inishdin l'nafshe. Everybody agrees that if you by waiting to go to Beis Din, you're going to lose. It could be that there's no possibility of recovery. There's a chance you're not going to recover something. Meaning he may use up what you're dealing with, and maybe he has no money to pay you. So if that's the case, so everybody agrees. Aved inishdin l'nafshe. Ki pligi. Hecha v'leka pseida. When you could just go to Beis Din, you're not. So basically, he's going to damage your property. So instead of standing up to him and beating him up, so he won't damage your property, you'll take him through the Torah and you'll get them. You'll collect the money that way. So that's where they are. Yehuda Amar lo aved inishdin l'nafshe. Yehuda says you're not allowed to act on your own behalf. The chevan v'leka pseida. Since you don't stand to lose anything ultimately, leizel kami dayana. So go in front of the judges and let the judges handle it. Rav Nachman Amar and Rav Nachman. Ironically, Rav Nachman, who was the powerful judge, perhaps he wanted to clear his docket. I mean, he realized the problems. Rav Nachman Amar Aved Inishdin L'Nafshe. The Chevan De Bidinav Ad Lo Tarach. Since I'm justified in doing it, since I am right, why should I have to go through all the tircha of going to Beis Din? It's a big hassle. So the Gemara presents this machlokas. Now, obviously, I should state at the outset that there are potentially two dangers in Aved Inishdin L'Nafshe. Number one is that you wind up in a society of vigilantes. Now, obviously, aved inishdin l'nafshe doesn't mean I see somebody, you know, doing something wrong and I pull out a gun and shoot him. Aved inishdin l'nafshe means l'nafshe. Someone is taking my property. Someone is harming me. I stand up for my own rights. But still, there is a certain danger. You know, people may, you know, go a little bit overboard. Now, obviously, the concern here is not about someone stam who's dishonest, because a thief is a thief. He's going to act anyway. He's going to steal anyway. But still, the idea of having people sort of act on their own behalf can in some ways create a lawless society, even if the desire, in fact, is to create law. The second concern, a very real one, is that as the Mishnah in Negayim says, and it's a wonderful double entendre, kol ha-negayim adam roe chutz mi-negay atzma. And a person is allowed to, a kohen can look at any negayim in the kohen tamei atar except for negayim in his own body. But that's obviously a melitza also for a general statement that people have the ability to see flaws in everything except for themselves, and people can see faults in any argument except for their own arguments, their own tainas. So the fact is, a person might act thinking that they're entitled to this particular thing, but they in fact could be wrong. I think you owe me $100, therefore when you're not looking, I'll go lift your wallet and take $100. Right? Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe if the dayanim were to hear me out, they would say, you're wrong, you're not entitled to $100. So those are obviously two concerns. But at least when we have to really look at some of the details of aved inishdin l'nafshe, but right now the Gemara presents it as a machlokas, but everybody agrees that b'makom pseida, we do say aved inishdin l'nafshe. When there's no pseida, when one can recover through the courts without potential real loss, you know, what you're losing right now, so then it's a machlokas. So now the Gemara says as follows, Masiv Rav Kahana, ben bag bagomer, al tikones l'chatzar chaverecha, lita l'sholcha, Shalom Gershus. You should not enter your friend's courtyard and effect to sneak in order to take your thing, you know, without asking, without permission. Shema Tere Olaf Kaganov. Lest you appear like a ganav. Hela, Shivar Ashinav, smash him in the teeth. Ve'omar lo, and say to him, Sheli ani noto, I'm taking mine. So what do you see that from that? You see that Aved Nishkina Lanafshe. Okay, and the assumption here is that Makam Balekab say that you could have taken him to Beis Din. So you're allowed to, if he might not stand up, you might just say, okay, take your thing. But if he refuses, you can physically confront him and potentially physically injure him. Obviously, only do this if you're bigger than he is. And Ben Balekab says, but don't sneak in. Be right in his face and say, this is mine, I'm taking it back. So the answer to the Gemara is, Amar Lei Imcha Ben Balekab Yechidahu Pligira Ben Rala. We don't know how this is so, but Rav Chista would say that Rav Yehuda would say Ben Bagbag is a das yachid. Okay, so far what we've seen is that if you're dealing with someone who has my object, and the outcome of the Beis Din of a Din Torah would be to get my object back, so that I'm allowed to do according to Ben Bagbag right now, and even if there's no pseida. Next case, Tashma Shor Sha'ala Aga Bechaver Lahargo. One shor, the horses would have been a better mashal. The horses are horsing around. One shor jumps on the other one, and you're afraid that your shor is on the bottom and your shor is going to die. And so the Brisa says, what happens is if you go and sort of pull your bottom shor out and the other shor falls down flat on the ground and dies, so you're pater. Now, what was this case? So here, just a piece of background. If a shor tam, a shor that has not established a habit of goring or injuring, does damage, you're only allowed to collect from the body of that particular animal. However, if a shor muad does damage, and you're only allowed to collect chatzi nezek, you're going to lose half of your shor, half of your damages. If it's a shor muad, then the other person pays Nezek Shalem from the shore itself, from anything, from any properties he has, min ha'aliyah. So the Havamina of the Gemara here, and I don't want to spend much time on the details, is my lav, this is not a case, the mu'ad, where the shore that was jumping on your shore is a shore that's mu'ad to jump on other shvarim, and therefore you're going to be able to collect in Beis Din Nezek Shalem, and it doesn't matter, even if that shore that's jumping on your shore is not worth that much, you'll collect it from the rest of the assets of the owner of the shore. My love the muad the lakab seda. The Gemara says lo betam the ikab seda. You know why you're allowed to be aved dina lanafshe here and in effect damage your friend shor? Why? Because if you don't intercede, you're going to lose half the damage. If your shor drops dead and it's now worth $200 less than it was before, you're going to lose $100 on the deal and you can't reclaim it in the Beis Din because he's only chayav chatzi nezek. So the Gemara says no, we're dealing with the shor. So that's why you're allowed to do it. Okay. Let's move to another case. The next paragraph, Toshma, Hamamale Chotzer Chaver Kadei Yayin Bekadei Shemen. For some reason, you seem to think that my driveway is a self-storage facility, and you pile stuff up there, and I can't get by. And I have two choices. I could, slowly but surely, move each barrel carefully and move it to the side of my driveway so I can pull into my garage. Alternatively, almost out of a movie, I could just take my car and run right through the barrels and smash them all, and you're going to lose, many of your barrels are going to be destroyed, but it's much less of a tircha for me to do that. So the Brisa says, Balachatzer Meshaber V'yotze Meshaber V'nichnas. I can smash my way in, smash my way out if I need to get by. So Omer Nachman Bar Yitzchak, so it sounds like even Abed Ishtil Nafshe V'malkom Dalekab say that. So Amar Nachman Bar Yitzchak Meshaber V'yotze the Beis Din Meshaber V'nichnas L'Havis Chuyosa. It means somehow, I don't know exactly what the Nachman Bar Yitzchak envisioned, but somehow really you couldn't, the assumption is the Brisa meant you could smash randomly to get his stuff out of your courtyard. Here, no, you're only allowed to smash enough to get through. Just enough to make a pathway so that if you need to bring proofs to Beis Din that this is your chatzer, or if you need to get to Beis Din that you can smash your way out, but minimal amount of damage necessary. Okay. Finally, Tashma, the Katso Sas Kapa. This is the pasuk that we saw earlier, the woman who steps forward to save her husband. So the Brisa says, Mamon. Okay, you don't actually cut off her hand. So what's the din here? My love, the She'ina Yechol Lahatzilei de Deracher. Is this not a case where the only way she could have protected and saved her husband was by doing what she did? Nothing short of that would have caused her husband's opponent to let go. So the answer is lo, sheyachol lahatzil ayidei davar acher. Aval eina yachol lahatzil ayidei davar acher petura. So the Gemara here has made a very interesting okimta in that pasuk. We read that pasuk, and you might think that it means that the wife is, even if she's entitled to defend her husband, there are some things that she's not allowed to do. So apparently the Gemara says no, she's absolutely entitled to do that if that's the only way she can get the other guy to release his grip on her husband. Then she is permitted to do anything she needs to do. It's very much parallel to the din of rodeh. By the din of rodeh, you're not allowed to kill a pursuer unless that's the only means of stopping the rodeh. If you can, you know, cut off a limb to do so, if it's yachol lahatzilo be'achad me'evara, so then you're not allowed to kill the person. So the same thing the Gemara basically is saying is going on here. A woman is allowed to intercede to save her husband, but she's only allowed to use measures that are absolutely necessary. If she uses measures that go beyond the necessary, then Beis Din wouldn't do that either. You don't do more than is necessary. Okay. So anyway, the maskana of the Gemara, as understood by all the Mishnayos, is that we paskin like Rav Nachman. Most of the sources that the Gemara quotes would point in the direction of Ovid Inish Dina Lenafshen, even v'makom d'lekap seva, even when there's no loss. Now note, though, that the examples that are found in the Gemara fall into one of two categories. Either when it doesn't actually involve collecting money from you, taking money from you, but rather physically standing up to you or just sort of being able to physically do what I need to do to walk in a certain place. And those situations where it doesn't involve my taking money from you, it's taking something that's already my object, at least according to my version of the story. In other words, if you have my object and I can enter your house, just take my object back. I shouldn't do it secretively. I should do it very openly. I should do it confrontationally. I shouldn't look like I'm a ganav sneaking in, but I'm allowed to do that. What the Gemara does not talk about doing is going into your house to take something as payment for something that you owe me. Let's say I loaned you money, or let's say I worked for you and you didn't pay me, or let's say you did damage to me, you did nezek to me, and by virtue of that you should have to pay me money. The Gemara doesn't talk about me going into your house and taking an object which is yours, either as collateral or to take it and sell it, or to take money as payment. That the Gemara doesn't talk about. So this is, I think, sort of the crux of the question that I started with. Does Aved Inish Din Lenafshei apply in such a circumstance? But there's some more in between here and there. One might look, of course, at Aved Inish Din Lenafshei and suggest that this is also sort of a melitza. It doesn't mean din. It means I'm acting on behalf of my own rights. It doesn't have what we would classically call the terms of mishvat. However, when the Tur in Siman Dalet in Choshen Mishpat introduces this topic, he makes it very clear that in fact this is a form of din. Now the Mishnah in Avo says, source 5, Hu ha'yomer al tehei dan yachidi she'en dan yachidi ala echad. You're not supposed to be a dan yachidi. The Gemara in Sanhedrin in the first perek, the opening sugya, talks about how many dayanim you need for a din Torah. It talks about what circumstances a yachid can be done, an individual dayan can be done. We pass in the Shulchan Aruch that a yochid mumcha, a person perhaps who's samach enam, a genuine mumcha in Gemara and Svara and Aldinim, is allowed to force Bali Dinim to come in front of him for judgment, even though he's a yochid. But that's not ideal. He's supposed to, l'chatchila, he should have other people sit with him. Because al tehei dan yachidi, because the only one who's a dan yachidi is the Ribbono Shel Olam. Okay. Now the Tur in Siman Gimel Choshen Mishpat lays out all the dinim of how many dayanim you need. When you need three, when you need one, what kind of dayanim. He comes and opens Siman Dalet with the following statement in source 6. Afal pi sheyachid eino yachol ladun, even though normally a yachid cannot be a dayan on his own, he cannot force people to judge in front, to be judged in front of him. Ose din la'atzma. If he, in fact, is the Baal Din, sometimes a yachid can be ose din. Peirush im roesh shelo biyat acher, if he sees his object in somebody else's possession, shegezala, that stole it from him, yachol lakachas miyado mashegezalo, he's allowed to take it back. The im ha'echad omen kenegdo limchos bo, if the person stands up to stop him, yachol hakoso, he can hit him, and achiyani chinam, until he lets him go, likach shelo, to take his own thing. Lo mi boi im hu davar shem lo yikachenu atam miyado, sheyelo hefse. not only a case where there will be hefsed if you don't take it now, the other person will spend it, you know, he'll sell it, and you're not going to be able to get it back from him. The pshita shows it in the atzma. Of course you can act on your own behalf. Upatar al mashemakeyu, and you're exempt from any ancillary damages that you cause. You know, the object might be worth $50, and if he stands in your way, you might beat him up, and he has $1,000 in medical bills. Doesn't matter, you're putter from those damages. If you had no other choice. So not only in a case where you stand to lose and you won't be able to get this money back in Beis Din, even it's something that you won't lose if you wait until you go to Beis Din. But you just don't want to bother. It is a tircha. It takes your time. Today, going to a Beis Din also costs money. You have to pay the dayanim. So why do I want to go through that tircha? Afilu hachi, even though there's no pseida, the Torah says, kevon shebarur lo shehadin imo, since it is absolutely clear to him that he is right, and that means, obviously, he has to be absolutely certain, v'yachal lahotzi bedin miyado, and he would, at least theoretically, be able to extract it from him in din, in a Beis Din, Yeshlo Rishus Lahatzil Eshlo, he has the permission to save his own, Da'afilu Al Yidei Haka, even if he has to strike the other person, Im Eino Yachal Atzilu B'Din Acher, if there's no other way of saving himself. So the Shulchan Aruch clearly paskins like Rav Nachman, at its word, paskins like Rav Nachman, but again, the case that he provides really is a situation of trying to get your property back. But you're dealing with tangible property which belongs to you. Now, just a sort of a note al pi halacha, why I'm emphasizing that. If a person owes me money, genuinely owes me money, and I seize an object from them as collateral, I am not allowed to sell that object. For me to sell that object is gezel. The person does owe me money. And theoretically, if the person refused to pay, at some point the Beis Din might order that object be sold in order to pay me, but fundamentally that object still, the collateral, still belongs to the original person. Unless we made a t'nai that if someone gives me a mashkon and says that if I don't pay you the loan back by time X, you may sell the mashkon, that's a different story. But certainly if I seize collateral, I do not have the right to sell it al pi din, and if I do, I'm a goslin, it's not my object. What does that object give me? Number one, it means that if Beis Din rules in my favor, then, and the guy has no other money, or refuses to pay anyway, it may be easiest for the Beis Din to say, take the collateral and sell it. But there is another very, very valuable aspect to having collateral, not simply just the question of being able to collect money. I don't think it's such a subtle point, but it's a major, major point in halacha, which is as follows. Typically, when I walk into Beis Din and I lodge a claim against you and I want to collect money from you, so the golden rule of Choshen Mishpat is Hamotzi Mecharveir Olav Araya. The burden of proof to collect money falls upon the motzi, the collector. And the person who has the money right now is Musak, he does not have the burden of proof. Now, what is proof? Proof is Eidim, proof is Ishtar. What if proof is just I say that I loaned you the money and you deny it? Well, I'm going to lose. However, if I have collateral of yours, which you cannot prove that I have, in other words, either the object is not distinct as belonging to you, and when I took it, or let's say I took it from you, but there were no witnesses to the fact that I took it from you, I have a very powerful legal tool in my hands. I have what we call amigo. Amigo literally means mitoch, since. Since I could deny having your collateral, or I could deny that the collateral belongs to you, I could say that you gave it to me, you sold it to me, whatever it is, I will now be Neman and Beis Din for a taina that I lodge unless you can disprove it. Why? The principle of Migo is that if I were going to lie, I would have simply told an equally good or better lie. And the fact that, and I would win with that lie. In other words, if I walked into Beis Din, if you came to me and said you have my mashkan, and I said, what mashkan? Not your mashkan, this is my object. And if you had no proof that you hadn't sold it to me, the rule by, in general in halacha, is that the possession is 9/10 of the law by metaltelin. So if I'm holding the mashkel and it's my house, unless we have eidos that I took it from you as a mashkel or stole it or really grabbed it from you, if I say that's mine and I bought it from you, I win. So I would win with such a taina. So now if I say that you loaned me money and you never paid me back, even if I don't have a shtar or I don't have eidim to the loan, I'm going to win with amigo. Beis Din will say that I must be telling the truth, because if I were lying, I would have told a better lie. Now, therefore, now that doesn't mean I'm allowed to, so apidin, when I walk into Beis Din and say, yes, it is his mashkon and I took it, but that's because he owes me money. So right now I don't have the right to sell that mashkon. But I will, but what the having the collateral does is it gives me tremendous power in the context of the arguments of the Din Torah. Okay. So now, coming back to moving towards the Shulchan Aruch. So up until now we haven't seen seizure of collateral. What we've seen is you're allowed to seize your own object back. In fact, what you would do in that case, if I take my object back and then he brings me to a Din Torah, what am I going to say to the Dayanim? I'm not going to say he owes me money. I'm going to say that's my object and that's the end of the Din Torah. But the question is, would one be allowed to seize money, to seize collateral? Question one, can one seize collateral? And number two, can one seize payment? That's really the question. Now, there's one kind of payment that has to be said at the outright that it's absolutely usur to take. The Torah states in Parshas Ki Tzeitzei, source number 7, Ki sashev re'acha mashas n'uma lo savo v'so lavo rabotel. If a person owes you money, you are not allowed to enter his house in order to seize a mashkon. Bachutz ta'amod, you have to stand outside. V'isha sheratano shevo yotzi elechas ha'avot achutza. You have to wait for the person to bring out collateral. You may not violate the privacy of his home to seize a mashkan. There is a machlokas in the Gemara as to whom this pasuk is being addressed to. Is this pasuk being addressed to the lender, or is it being addressed to the shaliach Beis Din even? And we paskin that it applies even to the shaliach Beis Din, meaning the executor, the person authorized by the court, is not allowed to enter the person's house to take a mashkon. He has to wait outside and ask for the mashkon. Now, at some point, if the person refuses to do that, we're still not going to enter his house, but we might bring him to Beis Din and beat him up until he does what Beis Din tells him to do. But even a shaliach Beis Din may not enter the person's house to seize collateral, and we may assume, this is not pasha, that a shaliach Beis Din may only seize collateral if the guy is holding it outside his house, but you, the lender, may not even do so outside his house. Meaning, can you be menatko bashot? Can you tear the shirt of his coat off when he's not in his house, when he's in public? So a shaliach Beis Din certainly could do that in theory, but a yachin might not be able to do that. So if there's one case that you're not allowed to be avid ishdil anavshe by seizing a mashkon, it would be by a situation of a halva'a. Now, a piece of background here in halacha. There are lots of ways that you can owe a person money. You can owe a person money because you stole from him, because you did damage to his property, because he worked for you and you didn't pay him, because you have his object, his lost object, and you didn't return it to him, or because he loaned you money and you didn't pay it back. This din, every case except for the last one, is not called a loan. It's not a halva'a. There is an abstract monetary obligation in theory, but it does not have the status of a loan. Just for one halachic example of why that matters, is that the Shemitah year doesn't dissolve it. If I borrow money from you and the Shemitah year passes, I don't have to pay you back. If you worked for me and I haven't paid you yet, and we haven't converted that into debt, I still have to pay you. It's not called a halva. So this din, not being allowed to enter the person's house, might only apply to a straight-up loan, not to other kinds of monetary obligations. Okay. Now, if you turn your attention to source 9, before we get to the Shulchan Aruch, the Mordechai in Baba Kama presents the following limitation. This is very important on Aved Nishdin Lanavshe. The Mordechai says, Kaimalan Rav Nachman, the Aved Nishdin Lanavshe, Pasach Rabbeinu Meir, the Hanimili, the Chefetz Hamavurar Shehu Shalo, that this applies only when you have a specific object which belongs to him. Umachzik bo, umasarad lahachzer lo. His friend is holding on to it and refuses to return it. If it's talking about something else, which it's not clear, that it's not that that he's certain that it belongs to him, and certainly if it's an abstract debt, you're not allowed to seize it afilu hava lepseida, according to my own account. Why? You have a lawless society. People cannot function that way. Now, what's his proof to this? What's his proof that you're only allowed to seize your object that is clearly, at least according to your opinion, yours, without a doubt? The Vadai Rav Nachman, who says Aved Inishdin Lenafshe, Lo Polygam Asnisan, the Perakamakavel, Hamalves Chavevo, Eno Rashoy Lemashkino. You're not allowed to walk into his house and to seize property as collateral. And he goes on to quote the Pesukim. So he says, you see from that you're not an Aved Inishdin Lenafshe is a very limited principle. It means when someone else has my object, or someone else is occupying my house, I'm allowed to go throw them out. I'm allowed to go seize my object. But if it's something that it's not that the object is clearly mine, but let's say you owe me money, there's some issue here, so then Aved Inishdin Lenafshe doesn't apply. Now, the truth be told, there is a very, very important din in Siman Aleph Choshen Mishpat known as Tfisa, seizing property. And the din of Tfisa is that in situations where Beis Din will not act, Bizman Hazeh, because Beis Din is not authorized to judge Dinei Knasas, they're not authorized to judge every type of case. If I am Tofes, property from you, Beis Din will now award me the property or its equivalent, even though normally they can't judge the case. But once I'm Tofes, if you want to get your object back, now Beis Din will sit in judgment on the case. In other words, even though Beis Din, let's say, does not judge, if I hit someone in public, like physical contact, and I humiliate them, so there's no din of boshes bizman hazeh in Beis Din, because there's no chisaron kis, there's no financial loss, direct financial loss. But if I seize the money, then Beis Din will say, okay, well, let's see how much you really should have paid him for boshes, and if I seize the right amount, I get to keep it. If I seize too much, they make me give back the difference. There is a din of tfisa. Some Rishonim, very much parallel to this, claim that tfisa is limited to, let's say, an object did damage to me, which Beis Din doesn't judge typically, like a shor gor is a person. So we posit that Beis Din doesn't judge such a case because it's very rare. So tfisa does work, but some Rishonim say that only if you toface the shor. I can't go just grab any property of yours to compensate me. It has to be just the object that did the hezek. That's what some Rishonim say. They say that it's just this tfisa is a takana. But the Rosh in Bava Kama, in the first parak, says, no, I'm allowed to seize anything. It's Aved Inishdin Lenafshe. That's what the Rosh says. And that opinion clearly disagrees with the Mordechai and says that Aved Inishdin Lenafshe is not limited to the seizure of my object. It means I'm allowed to seize, you know, all sorts of other things in order to get payment. Now, the only difference, however, note, between the case that the Rush talks about and our case, is the Rush is talking about a case where you can't go to Beis Din, by definition, because it's the kind of case that Beis Din does not judge. Right? Tfisa is used in situations where our Bate Din don't have the power to adjudicate. However, in our case, it's a situation where, in theory, you could go to Beis Din, you just don't want to bother. So it might not be perfectly parallel. Okay, but this is the opinion of the Mordechai. The Ma'arit comes along, in the interest of time, I'm not going to read the whole thing, but I'll just read the first paragraph. The Ma'arit was asked to adjudicate a particular dispute, I think it was about a menorah, a silver menorah in the Beis HaKnesses, and the Ma'arit says as follows, source number 10. Ulefi dati eno, he disagreed with the questioners who said that you're not allowed to see his stuff. Dehalo mikri aved dina lenafshe, it's not considered osed din la'atzmo, you have to be acting as a dayan would act. What would that be? Either legabos mamon b'shvil mamon acher. Now, legabos mamon doesn't mean to take a mashkon. It means to collect payment that is given over to someone at the end of the case. O, lahakos es chavero, or to strike another person, which is a function based, it's a function of kfiya, forcing someone to do what they're obligated to do. O lahafsido, or to cause them a loss, ad shishalem hamamo. Bechi haigavna shayach lemeimar dina lenafshe. That's called avin yishdin lenafshe. And it's mutter in some cases, maybe not mutter in other cases. Aval bechi haigavna lo mikre ela tofes bechula tamuda. What you're doing when you just seize an object is tfisa. Tfisa is not avin yishdin lenafshe. Why not? Because what do you do when you seize an object? You don't walk away and say, have a nice day, and maybe I'll never see you again. You hold on to the object until the guy either agrees to pay you, or until you go to a din Torah, and then you say, if you don't believe me that he really owes me the money, I have collateral, and I could have denied ever having taken this from him, so you should believe me that I'm giving you the straight facts. And if Beis Din says, according to what you're telling us, in fact, you really should win, then you win. And Beis Din will tell the other guy, pay, and he's not going to give you the mashkon back until you pay. But that's not, when you take that, when you do tfisa, you're not collecting. You're simply taking collateral. So the Ma'arik says, Tfisa is not called Ovid Inishdina Lenafshe. So there appears to be a machlokes between the Mordechai and the Ma'arik whether one is allowed to go seize indiscriminately or objects that are not the objects in dispute from someone else in order to bolster or strengthen your case. The Shulchan Aruch writes in Siman Dalet, source number 11, Yochal Adam Lasus Din Liatzno, Imroa Shalo Biat Acher Shigzalo, Yochal Lakachto Miyada, you can seize the object. Vimo Echo Acher Omeid Kinecto, if the guy stands up to you, Yochal Lakosa Sheni Chenu. Afilu Hu Dover Shemo Hefsein, Im Yam Tenat Shemiden Budin. But Vahushe Yuchal Lavarer Shalo Hu Nota Budin, you have to, it has to be clear, absolutely clear, that yours, that you would win this in a Din Torah. But you're not allowed to seize a mashkon for the debt that he owes you. Now, it may not be entirely clear what the Mechaber had in mind here, because it's possible he meant that you're never allowed to seize a mashkon for the money that's owed, any kind of money. The Ramah comes along and says, V'yesh omrim dafka b'chovo mamish, that you're not allowed to seize for a chov, aval chayv lo b'lo halva'a. If it's not a loan, oshe ein zarach lamashkino ki ukvar etzlo pikadam, or you don't have to seize it from him because you already have the mashkon. O mitzel biaracher, you find his, you see his property in somebody else's possession, so you take it from there. Mutar latosa, you're allowed to do tvisa there. Now, one note about this tvisa. And that is that tfisa only works as a matter of principle if you do it when there are no edim. Why? Because if you seize the object and there are witnesses, it doesn't accomplish anything for you. Because when you go to Beis Din, you no longer have a migo. The migo that you would have used to win your case, to win your argument, was that since I could have said it was never his object or I bought it from him, and I could have denied the whole thing, I'm believed to lay out the kind of that I do, but if there are edim to the fact that you seize it, then you can no longer, you didn't have an option to deny it against edim. In fact, without going into it, but for those of you who might have once upon a time in Cheskes Abatim, you can't even seize in front of one aid. And that's a very famous case of what's known as Nascha de Rabbi Abba, without going to the reasons why. So in order for tfisa to be functional, and we assume that you're only allowed to be toe-faced as a matter of principle if you're going to win in Beis Din. So you have to do tfisa. For those who hold that you're allowed to do tfisa, you have to do it shalom b'fnei edim. Okay. So that's the Ramah's, the opinion the Ramah offers here. But then he says, there's another opinion. This is the Mordechai. V'yeshomim v'lo aminan avid inishdina l'nafshe, rak b'chefetz hamavur lo shehu shalom. Kegon shegzalo, arotze l'gozlo, arotze l'aziko, then yochol ha'atzo shalom. Aval l'mfarnis hayav lo mikoach gizelo, m'mokom acher lo. I mean, you could either protect your property or seize your property back, but you're not allowed to go after other property which actually isn't yours. So up until this point, the Ramah has said that there's a machlokes about the scope of Avin Nishdin Lanafshe, whether you're allowed to take other property or only the property in dispute. He hasn't acknowledged yet the Ma'arik's position, which amounts almost in effect to the same thing that the Ramah first quoted, which is And I'm going to skip the indented lines, but go to the last Yesh Omer. Yesh Omer delo mikri avid dina lenafshei ela kishemazik lechaveru kigon shemakenu. When you hit him, velachein lo yuchol lasos elim ken yuchol levar shushala. Aval tvisa bialma shetvaso lemashkon yuchol lasos bechol inyan piyoid achakach imol adin. Now, there's a very subtle difference between this opinion and the first opinion the Rambam quoted. The Sma, the Sefer Mir Seinayim, on the side of the Shulchan Aruch deals with exactly the difference. But theoretically, the difference between the first opinion of the Rambam, that you're allowed to seize property except for a loan, because of Avid and Ishdin and Lanafshe, applies to that. And this opinion of the Marik, that it's not even called Avid Ishdin and Lanafshe, what's the difference? The difference is whether or not you're able to be Tofes in the presence of Aden. Now you'll ask me, according to the first opinion, if you can't win it in Torah, you're not allowed to do Aved in Ishtin Lanafshe, and therefore you can't be Tofes in front of Aden, because you wouldn't win in Din Torah by doing if you did so. The second opinion, which says that Tfisa is not called Aved in Ishtin Lanafshe, it's just Tfisa, it's a separate category. Din means you have to act as a Beis Din. You have to hit somebody, you have to punish somebody, you have to collect money permanently. So, Tfisa is not called Avin Ishtin Lanafshe, but you'll ask yourself the question, what's the point of being Tofes Shelo B'fnei Eden? So the answer is, because sometimes when you seize the money that you're owed, the guy might simply decide it's not worth the hassle and let go. Now, it's technically, if you go to a Din Torah and he denies it, he's going to win. But there's a possibility that he's not going to bother, so you're allowed to be Tofes if it's just Tfisa, if it's not Din. And if he doesn't bother you, well, guess what? You got your money. If he does, well, all right, so you tried, it didn't work. Whereas if you hold that Tfisa really is considered of an Inishdin Lanafshe, you're not allowed to do it if you won't win in the first place. Okay. So anyway, these are really the two deos in Shulchan Aruch. I suspect that that we accept the principle of Tfisa either under the rubric of Avin Inishdin Lanafshe or because it's not called Avin Inishdin Lanafshe. But I want to bring it back to our case. When the Talmud first came, well, let me first talk about the din before I tell you what I told him at the time. It would seem, at first glance, based upon the Gemara, especially if I hadn't presented the analysis that I did, that it should have been a davar pashut that A, he should be able to keep the computer as a mashkon, which it is, and B, that maybe he should even be able to overbuild them just to collect the money that he's owed. Now, the first part is certainly the case. He certainly could keep the computer as a mashkon. I advised him not to do, because in the context that he's in, as a young person working, it's in his community, it probably would have been bad for business. If this family, even if they were wrong, would badmouth him, it probably would not have been very good for his business. So for the amount of money in question, which was, I think, a sum total of $30, so it really wasn't worth it, the risk to business. But al pidin, certainly he would have been entitled to take a mashkon. Certainly they gave him the computer. Firstly, it's not a halva, and he's not entering their house anyway. They gave him the computer willingly, he'd have a mashkon. But the question is, al pidin would be allowed to overbuild him. Now, from the perspective of Gnevas Das and Gnevas Mammon, it's not, because he's owed that money. You know, no differently than if you drop the $20 bill and you owe me $20, it wouldn't principally be Gneva taking that money. We can talk about whether it's mutter or not mutter, whether you say Avin Ishtin Lanafshe, but as a matter of principle, it shouldn't be any form of Geneva. Okay. But the question is, do we say in this case that he'd be allowed to overbill to get them to pay him money and collect it that way without telling them? My first response to him, Alpidin, was that it would be mutter to do so. More recently, I advised him not to, but I'll explain why in a moment. Recently, I spoke to Rav Schechter about this, and he thought really you should. But the truth is, I'm not convinced that is so. I'm not convinced that Avin Ishtin Lanafshe applies here, because there is, as I sort of stressed throughout, and this is why I've stressed it, there's no precedent in the Shulchan Aruch for taking property from someone else as collection. There's only a precedent for taking something as a mashkel. Now, one might argue against, and therefore, in this case, when I overbill them, I'm taking the money and walking away with it. It's not, when I take their computer, I'm not selling the computer. I'll give them the computer back when they pay me. That's the classic mashkin. So do I have the right to actually relieve them, lighten their wallet of money that they actually owe to me, when that's actually gevia, in the words of the Ma'arik? It's not a mashkin. It's not tfisa. Now, one might argue, contrary to what I'm suggesting, that the only reason why, normally, by a mashkin, we only speak about taking a mashkin is because I'm not allowed to sell a mashkin. Why? Because the mashkon really belongs to you. You have the right to say, I'll give you cash, but give me my mashkon back. But if you look, but if it's money, which is purely fungible, in this case, they're giving him abstract money. They write him a check for $90 instead of $60. That is abstract money. They don't have a claim for that abstract money. In fact, there might be a difference there between when they write me a check versus when I get a $20 bill. Because if I have a $20 bill, I'll pidin. If you have a $20 bill in your wallet, I'm not allowed to go take that and put another $20 bill in. That's gazela, because you own, technically speaking, you own not only the abstract money, but you own the chayfets of the money also. If you want to use the money, your $20 bill, you like it, it's beautiful, it's different, and you want to use it as a bottle stopper, and I steal it from you, so it might be less than a shavakuta, but it's still gazela. So in this case, though, it's better, you might argue, and maybe you could, that since it's not that they dropped $30 on the street and he didn't return the object, but rather, they wrote him a check. It's really literally just abstract funds, which they owe him, so you might say, in that case, you do say, Avid Inshdin Lenavshe. I'm not entirely convinced whether or not that's so. Shechta thought that really, Alpidin, it would be mutter to do so. I'll close and take a couple of questions with what I told the student. I said to him the following. I said, it's not worth going through the Torah, it's not worth your time. And the truth be told, even though technically speaking, I advised them against taking the computers in Mashkon if they brought it back because, that would have been worth more trouble. But I said, in terms of overbilling them, al pidin it might be mutar. But, as Rav told his son, it's a beautiful story. Rav's wife was cruel to him. He would ask for one thing, she'd give him the opposite. She'd ask for the opposite, she'd give him, can I have rice for dinner? She'd make pasta. Can I have pasta for dinner? She'd make rice. So when Rav's son got older, when he used to convey the message, he saw what was going on, so he would reverse it. So his father asked for pasta, he would tell his mother, Abba asked for rice. And so she would provide him with the right, she would make what he wanted. And he said to his son one day, your mother's gotten better as we've been married longer, right? Now she does what I ask. And his son said to him, no, Abba, that's because I flip it around. So Rav first said, my son is smarter than I am, right? Because he could have done that himself. But on top of that, he said, you shouldn't do that. He said, Lamed l'shonam daber sheker havein elu, the pasuk from Yirmiyahu, that you shouldn't be in the habit of speaking sheker, even though its purpose is a good one and there's no fundamental isser when you're not achieving ill-gotten gains. So in the same context, it's a very bad habit to be in. Even if you're justified in some cases in overbilling, it's the kind of behavior that breeds habits. And as an ish-emes, it's something that you don't want to do. At least, and certainly to run those risks for the amount of money involved would be inappropriate. Maybe even generally be inappropriate. So that was my advice to him, which I think that he took. But certainly this is one case where potentially this issue in Shulchan Aruch is very much a halacha l'maisa issue, whether a person can act to be avid in ishdina l'nafsha. Yes? So that has occurred to me. The question is, if you have A, no other means to do it, and B, if the purpose of Ben Bagbag is, and so the problem with Ben Bagbag is he's afraid you're going to be discovered. In a certain sense, Ben Bagbag, you could always become a Baba Machteres, right? Whereas in this case, you don't have that chashash.
Are you sneaking
in
the bill?
No. He sends him a bill. Instead of saying $90, it says $120. So he overbills them. They send him a check, end of story. So it might not involve him. Yes? Well, if there were... No. So if, in fact, he could prove his case mamish, he has aided him to his case, then he could do tfisa. But if he doesn't have absolute proofs he's going to win within Beis Din, then since tfisa be'edim won't work in Beis Din, tfisa alone will work, so we don't say avid inish dilan afshe, because if this case goes to Beis Din now, he loses. You're only, in effect, allowed avid inish dilan afshe if you're sparing yourself going to Beis Din, or, at the very least, you're sparing, you would win in Beis Din. But only if he's tofes shalomus me'edim. Yes, the other person. Yes, but the point is it's pro forma once it's done in front of Aiden. Now, in other words, he's going to walk into Beis Din without any proof that he's owed the money, except for that he's taken an object. The other guy pulls out the Aiden, it's over. So, really, from our perspective, why bother having him do that? If that's called the Aved Nishtina Lanafshe, if it's operating under that rubric. For the Marik Shita, it's not called Aved Nishtina Lanafshe, so we might say that you're allowed to take a risk that maybe he won't call you to Beis Din, maybe something else will come up, but if it only works together, Aved Nishtina Lanafshe, so since you lose it Beis Din as it stands, you're not allowed to do the Tvisa. Exactly. Well, no, I understand, but it could be or a Gazlan. But the point is, if he were to walk into Beis Din and produce proofs that he was owed the money, so now Beis Din will say what you're holding, in fact, as you say, is a mashkam. Not that it's his. But once you kofei shelo b'fnei, then now you, since you could deny the whole thing, you don't need rayas that he owes you the money. Your raya is that you're holding his object and he can't prove it, that it's theft. Yeah. So one of the things, obviously, and that's the other concern, that's why the Shulchan Aruch says it has to be mavura, though. I realize that there's a degree of subjectivity. So a person, look, you're dealing with honest people here. If you're dealing with the thief doesn't even ask the shayla, he'll just go and tape because he'll be lying to us himself. But So in every case, there is a certain amount of goodwill and a person being as honest as they can. If someone asks me the shayla, so given these circumstances, what he described, it was black on white according to his claim. In other words, there's no ambiguity. He laid out very clear at the beginning. He could be lying to me, but the psach would be predicated upon the fact that the facts he's stating are true. The fact is, he could seize. See, again, and that, by the way, there's the argument also against saying that he could bill. But rather that he could take a mashkon and has to go to Beis Din, because then when he goes to Beis Din, then Beis Din will listen to the facts. So all he's done is achieve nemanus for the facts.
My point is that if there's a suffix on that issue, why Al-Pidin is it mutter? Al-Pidin should not be mutter because it's a suffix.
So again, it goes like this. For him, it has to be Baruch Hashemesh that he's right. But then what he should have to do is he can seize, then he goes to Beis Din. Then he'll present his facts. You know, your concern is that maybe, in other words, there are two issues here. The question number one is, what happened? And what was the agreement? And the second question is, based upon that agreement, does he win or does he not win? So, look, at the end of the day, they're going to walk in the base, and he's going to present his time, that this is what we agree to. Now, they might argue on that, but assuming that he is absolutely 100% sure that that's what they agreed to, then from his vantage point, he's taking what's justly his. Now, the danger in allowing someone to take it and keep it and not do anything further is that maybe he's wrong in his judgment, not about what happened, but maybe even according to what he said, he doesn't win. So there's the advantage of bringing someone into Beis Din, and now Beis Din would say, okay, we believe everything you're saying, but based upon what you're saying, the other side wins, and they'll make him give it back.
So at the time he takes it, he thinks he's right, but if everyone is in adjudication he's wrong, it's
Ganeva.
So retroactively,
it's Ganeva. So it's Ganeva Bashogeg, and he pays it back. Yep. Yeah, you do have it. If I walk out of shul with your raincoat, that's good Ganeva B'shogeg. But he's taking what he. But I intentionally took it. I thought it was my raincoat.
I don't think that that the Gol Hadam would be even remotely close to.
Always a pleasure.
Mazel tov, by the way.
I don't think that the Gol Hadam would even be remotely close to Aved Nishtina, because, as I understand it, the Rotzeach B'shogeg, if he goes out, really may actually have a fiyuv misa. He has to stay in the Ir Mikvah.
So then you think that is Aved Nishtina?
No.
No, that would be din. You're acting as the shlech of the Beis Din.
Yeah, you're shlech of the Beis Din, but it's not din l'nafshe.
Well, that's my case. So now, I agree. But my point is, it's certainly not l'nafshe.
Right, it's not l'nafshe at all.
Yes.
But even if it's a mitzvah to do it, it's because it's the general Torah put on it. That's fine.
Now, what would you say about the case where the boat's in the harbor and then they tell them, we don't want to